Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 262 for August 24th, 2016. Doug, WG4U, tells us how to build a balanced tuner. Hello, everybody. It's K9EID and all of our usuals here. And you're watching and listening to Ham Nation. And we're coming to you through the brand new studio in Petaluma. Twit moved last week. They got on a trolley and moved. They really did. The whole shebang. And I watched some of it live. It was pretty cool. But Brian's in a whole new digs, and we'll be seeing exciting things happening out of there. They're just moving. But, hey, they got the Collins transmitter. They got the ICOM stuff over there. What else do you need? That's really great. Well, we're going to come back to some of that. But we're excited for everybody in Petaluma, and we'll see how it all unfolds for us. I'm going to go around the horn here a little bit and let you know what's happening. Gordo is down in Costa Mesa, and Gordo, how are you doing?
We are good, and we're all set for this Sunday, August 28th, Western Connecticut Ham Fest in East Unman Town Hall. Back to you, Bob.
Yeah, got that going. And did you take notes, George, while you were down in Huntsville? Did you take notes from all the other characters?
You know, I wish I had, Bob, but I had a little situation come up at work that, well, maybe it deserves mentioning. That we'll talk about it when you come back to me later in the show. It won't take but a minute. But I spent half my day Saturday on the phone, unfortunately. But I did get to see some great folks and pick up a few little toys.
Okay, that's good. Don, how are things with you? You hanging out with Skyler and all the others down there? I guess you had fun.
It was a great time, yeah, hanging out with the amazing youth of Ham Radio with Chris Bro, KD8YVJ, the Hiram Percy Maxim winner. Of course, we know him as Cincinnati Short Rib, although he's getting taller. We're going to have to change his name to Cincinnati Spare Rib, I think, coming up here pretty soon. And Young Ham of the Year went well. My son came with me, and when we walked back over to play around with Tom Medlin and Ted Randall, my son dropped a bomb on me in the hotel lobby, and I said, well, you need to go and talk to Gordon about this. He walked up to Gordon West, and he said, Mr. Gordon, I'm ready to get my license. So we're going to have a new ham in the house.
Uh-huh. Okay. Those are things you can't push. They just have to happen. So congratulations, and helping along a little. That's really great. I got a couple of things that I need to share with you. A lot of people ask me about. We have all kinds of wonderful little parts that if you're building things or you're trying to fix stuff. And so we took things by hand, all of the team back at in Fairview. And on our website, you can go up to the top corner of the website where it says dealer, and it'll drop down and you can get all these wonderful little things online. And that's really cool. And you got to remember that we use HiWire, which is the best, absolute best microphone cable, all of the best connectors. This is not cheap stuff like a lot of the guys. And it's really wonderful stuff. And all of the other products, there's hundreds of them. But I just want to let you know, because a lot of people ask me, how can I do that online? Well, now you can. So it's all up there. Just go to the dealer up in the corner, and you'll see it all there. And we're happy to be able to do that. And we got a lot of new things coming on. But Got the custom shops, got the new black microphones. We got a new black ICM and the new Heritage, all kinds of good stuff. Well, talking about good stuff, it's all happening in Costa Mesa. And I'm sure you got some great stories, Gordo, of the weekend. So let's see what happened.
Terrific. Now, while I can't share all the stories about Don and George and all the fun that we had, we do have some short shots that will take off right now. So, Brian, let's blast off with Huntsville short shots. And this was the U.S. Space and Rocket Center. So if ever you go to Huntsville again next year, take it in. You'll find that this rocket was ready to take off and ready for us to come aboard one of the finest run ham fests in the country. And we first start off, they call it Von Braun Center. And the name goes back to the early German rockets. And they had to move out one group and then move and prepare for us in an overnight fashion. And in almost an overnight fashion, those exhibitors that were waiting outside moved in. And as you can see, that is a huge center, wonderful lighting, good PA system, good everything. This is before the crowd came in. And of course, the exhibitors were all happy to see that there would be plenty of swap meet off to the side. Not really to the side. The swap meet surrounded a lot of the Von Braun Center. And the swap meet was quick to set up, and this was great. They allowed us to bring in vehicles to unload, and they had it so well orchestrated. One was going clockwise, the other one counterclockwise, and within no time, everyone was set up. And here is Roger of Wired Communications, and the Wired folks were definitely wired up in the showroom for the used gear. Actually, he had all new gear. That's Kimmy down front. And, of course, they were lit up great. Then the MFJ vehicle moved in. This is how big that center is. It is no problem to bring in a big vehicle and running this entire show. Well, actually, it was run by all the ham volunteers. But in charge of the entire, if it goes right or wrong, was Charlie, N4OKL. He had a smile on his face continuously. And as you can see, the setup went quick. And it went extra quick because those of you in charge of HamFest feed your supporters, the exhibitors, as they're setting up. They went overboard on the food, as you can see here. And the exhibitors set up real quick at Huntsville. ICOM, of course, has a great display. They get it moved in, and all Ray and his team need to do is to simply open up the doors, and they've got product showing. And, of course, ICOM America had their very popular IC7300. Will was there to show it off, and they had antennas everywhere, and we could see all sorts of things happening on the PAN adapter. Outside, ICOM America had their air, land, and sea emergency communications vehicle. This vehicle can patch almost anything into anywhere, into any antenna. That's Emmett's radio waves loop at the top. But George is going to give you more info about the ICOM America NCOM Land Mobile Emergency Radio Unit. And yes, plenty of ham radio on the inside. Well, I was there for our Ham Radio Instructor Academy, and they gave us a very nice room. We set out and got all of our certificates set up for those that would be attending the academy. We had a room that held 75, and we packed in a room that held 75. And, of course, we encourage all of you teaching classes, bring stuff, because people want to see the stuff that you are talking about or showing a PowerPoint. And so we brought the stuff. The only thing that got me in trouble on my carry-on bag was the CW keyer made out of a clothespin. But luckily, one of the inspectors was a past CW operator. He had me send some code on this little homemade keyer at 20 words a minute, and I was allowed to get on board. So have stuff, and that's what we really pitched. And we had a great time at the Instructor Academy. And by the way, if you were at the Instructor Academy in Huntsville, I need your photo. Send them to me, wb6noa@arrl.net. I want to show them off. So send me any photos that you may have taken at the Instructor Academy this past weekend. You gotta have stuff, and that's what we did. Every academy we do, all over the country, to a crowd of 60 to 80 Elmers, we always have real live stuff to greet them when they come in. Oh, yeah, and of course, we had the live pickle. There's Daniel, ready to light off the big light pickle demonstration of voltage, current, and resistance. Well, Joe, K0NEB, that does the CQ magazine kits, he and Don were looking and looking and looking at one of the displays here at the HamFest, and we were amazed at the hundreds of kits that are put out by a company called Nightfire Electronic Kits. And you can look them up at www.VictorAlphaKits, V-A, I shortened it, V-A Kits, just www.VAKITS.com in Ocala, Florida. And Don is going to be happy to put that one together. And there is Joe, the Mr. Kit guy. We have both of their approval that if you ever wanted a kit from the ground up, this great group has all sorts of varieties. www.VAKITS.com. Good. We love putting stuff together. There he is, Skyler, KD0, Whiskey, Hotel, Bravo, Young Ham of the Year. Don will be talking about this shortly. He was walking around with a 900 megahertz setup, all portable, built it completely himself. What an excellent ambassador for ham radio. And, of course, all the major manufacturers were there. All of the major dealers were there. All of the major, everyone's were there. Gigaparts, local to Huntsville, had their own little circular come on in and circle around booth. And everybody was so friendly that you couldn't go wrong at the Huntsville Ham Fest. And out at the used equipment, they had some new equipment suppliers. This was in the new area. And this fella makes all sorts of ham radio kits out of ammo cans. And they were first quality. Look at this. They even had chairs on each side of the exhibit hall. So if you got tired of lugging all that great gear around, you could take a break. They were really thinking at Huntsville. And finally, to wind it up, Don Arnold says, we are delighted to add more to the D-Star network. And he's got the new Kenwood. And Donnie says, if you want to learn more about that, go to his YouTube spot. Simply type in W6GPS on your YouTube site, and you'll get about a 12-minute video of the new Kenwood D74. And, you know, we are delighted because D-Star is, of course, one of the best ways to communicate literally around the world, and the more excitement we can mount on D-Star, the better it's going to get. And speaking of D-Star, let's go ahead and tune in ICOM and find out the latest, and then over to Don, and he'll talk about Young Ham of the Year.
Summertime fun. Get out there and get on the air. There's still plenty of time to enjoy the summer shine. Camping, road trips, hiking, and more. Wherever your adventure takes you this summer, make sure you bring your ICOM equipment along for the fun. On the go this summer, ICOM's new IC7300 is perfect for your next road trip. Revolutionary design and compact size, the real HF fun starts here. RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, SD card memory slot, and more. Why not communicate with the touch of your fingertips? Perfect for small spaces, the IC7100 is the ideal D-Star option for all outdoor seekers. Angle control head and touchscreen for quick intuitive operation, large internal speaker for clear digital audio, and it's perfect for multi-band and all-mode communications. Don't leave home without this mobile device. The IC5100A is a must-have for summertime travel, intuitive touchscreen operation, dual receivers with GPS, DV dual watch, Bluetooth option, and headset option. Visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to icomamerica.com/hamnation. Register to win for some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. And while you're there, learn how you could win the monthly grand prize. For August, the drawing is going to be for an ICOM ID-880H switchable VHF-UHF dual-band transceiver. It's got analog ND-STAR, 50 watts on both VHF and UHF, wideband receiver, free cloning software, and a lot more. So go to icomamerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. Sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And if that's not enough for you to win, I've got something else I'll be giving away here. It's the radio that everyone wants. It's the IC7300 from ICOM, along with an MFJ 30-amp switching power supply, tiny little power supply, and 100 foot of RG8X coax, and an off-center fed dipole antenna. That's to celebrate Amateur Logic's 11th anniversary coming up on our October 15th episode. ICOM and MFJ agreed to supply some prizes again, so I know everyone wants to get in and register for that radio there. And why wouldn't you? Just go to amateurlogic.tv/contest. You can get all the details there. I'll be telling you more about that in the future. But check it out. Register and good luck on that. Well, you know, I mentioned a moment ago that I spent half of Saturday at Huntsville on the telephone. So I didn't get to see everything I wanted to see, although I did come out with a nice selection of kits from Nightfire Electronics. I'm going to be building some stuff in the future, and we'll be looking at that. I'm still working on my ideas, but I've got some really cool little boards here that are going to make some great projects. It's not just a kit. It's a building block for special projects that you might have. And looking forward to doing some of that. But I got a telephone call Saturday afternoon, and they were having dropouts on all of my radio stations. The audio was dropping out. And I think maybe we talked about it before. Unfortunately, there's a T1 line that runs from the studio to a site that's sort of like a head end. It's got 950 megahertz STL transmitters that go out to all the transmitter sites. That's how they get the audio there. So if you lose that T1, you got six stations off the air. And that began happening. It started dropping out, hiccuping, having some artifacts. And so fortunately I had, I had to take care of a problem with that about a month ago when one of the pairs of the T1 line went bad. So I already had cables made up. And I was able to talk a guy back at the station on how to hook that up and get back on the air with some temporary codec units that ran off of cell phone internet, and we got back on the air. What had happened is, you know, those little pedestals that are on the side of the road that AT&T uses to connect from one wire to the next? Well, apparently copper thieves had decided to destroy two of those and try to find some copper in them. And they didn't get anything, but they destroyed them. And that took us off the air. And I don't know how many people's telephones quit, but that's what happened there. So Sunday night when I got back, AT&T said they had the problem fixed. So I had to go out and swap everything back the way it should have been. They had run a wire across the street and through the field out to the transmitter site. And so traffic was driving across the pair of wires that our T1 was on. And I said, this is not good. This is probably not going to last very long. I sure hope that they get in here and trench under or whatever they need to do to get it back like it should be. Well, yesterday, I decided to run over there to the site and do a couple of things. When I got there, I noticed that the city had decided to pave the street. They had a big one of those heavy rollers that packs the asphalt down, destroyed the wire. And so six radio stations off the air again. So that's my bad luck story. Copper thieves, and a couple of days later, a steamroller plows over my T1 line. Well, I've got some things to give away here. You know, last week I asked a question from the technician exam. Which of the following is the FCC rule regarding power levels used in amateur bands under normal, non-distress circumstances? There were a number of choices there, but there was only one that could be right. And we had a drawing of, everyone who got the right answer. And our winner was Don DeGidio, WB3BJU. And he said, George, the answer was D. While not exceeding the maximum power permitted on a given band, use the minimum power necessary to carry out the desired communication. Congratulations, Don. We're going to give you this MFJ-148RC radio control dual clock. It's got 12 or 24-hour display. It times or syncs itself off of WWV. It's got a 10-minute ID timer built into it. You can set one side for your local time, the other one for UTC. Great convenience for amateur radio operators there. We hope you enjoy that, Don. For next week, I have another prize here and another question. What we're going to give away is the MFJ, and what is this, the 422 DC volt ammeter. Great for mobile or really for your go kit operation. You got a voltmeter and an ammeter both on it. Power supply connector, so you can just put it in series with your rig. Another question from the technician exam. What is one way to recharge a 12-volt lead-acid station battery if the commercial power is out? And your choices are A, cool the battery in ice for several hours. B, add acid to the battery. C, connect the battery in parallel with the vehicle's battery and run the engine. Or D, all of these choices are correct. So if you think you know the answer to that, send it to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could be next week's lucky winner of this MFJ-4422 DC volt ammeter. And now let's, where are we going next? Well, we're going to look at a video from Randy. You know, he started building a new direct conversion receiver kit here, and I think he's actually going to melt some solder this week. So let's have a look at that.
Hi, Randy, K7AGE. This is part two of my ZZRX40 kit building video. In this video, I'm going to cover the tools that we'll be using to build the kit and also identifying and inventorying all of the parts. And I'll solder the first part on the board. Let's get started. All right, let's look at some of the tools we may use to build this kit. On the left here, I have two examples of needle nose pliers, a very fine tip, and I'm going to say more of a medium tip. We use these to hold parts and to bend the wire leads. On the right here are two examples of side cutters. We use these to cut the component leads close to the circuit board after we solder. Okay, I have a pair of pliers in case I need to hold or tighten something down. I have a pair of wire strippers. A little utility knife is handy to have. And I have both a flat blade and a Phillips screwdriver. I've also read the instruction manual for the kit. I found a couple steps that I may need to make some voltage measurement checks. So I have my digital multimeter. A small adjustable vise is useful to hold the circuit board while you solder. This is the soldering iron that I'll be using for this project. It's a Weller WES-51. And the iron itself has a very small tip on it. So if you don't have a fancy soldering station, just a little simple soldering iron like this will work. It has a small tip. So this is the solder I'll be using. It's rosin core solder. You'd want to be using acid core solder like you find in the plumbing department. We don't want to be breathing in the fumes from soldering. This is a fan I bought on Amazon. This is an old 24-volt fan I found in my junk box. It works fine off of 12 volts. I've soldered on some power poles, so I can use these to blow the smoke away from me while I'm soldering. So in case I need to do some desoldering, I have my vacuum desoldering tool. Solder wick is handy to have. This is a braid that you place on top of the solder joint with your iron and heat up, and the solder will wick up into the braid. Very useful to have. I have progressive lenses in my eyeglasses, and for projects like this, I find a pair of reading glasses allows me to view closer and have a wider field of view. A little magnifying glass will be handy to have to read the labels on some of the small parts. If you don't wear glasses, you may want to consider wearing a pair of safety glasses to protect your eyes from flying leads when you cut them, or maybe some flying solder. So a lot of guys use muffin tins to put their parts in to help organize things for a kit build. What I'm going to do is use this cardboard box that I've made up, and I just cut it into this shape. I left a lip on the front here to make this a tray so things don't fall out. I put some tape in here to cover up, to tape up the seam so parts don't slide underneath the flaps. And what makes this convenient is that the corrugated part of the cardboard is a convenient place to push the parts down into. And, of course, you can write the designations across the cardboard as well. And this makes it a convenient way to organize your parts for the kit build. So I thought I would start with the inventorying of the parts. I have the parts list from the manual. And I'm going to start with the capacitors. I've got the bag here of parts I've showed you before. I'm just going to cut open this bottom section of the bag and dump out all the, oops, one more. There we go. Labeled 104K. So these are the 0.1 microfarad capacitors. Okay, this one's labeled 224K, and this is the 0.22 microfarad capacitor. This is labeled 101J, so this is a 100 picofarad capacitor. This is labeled 181, so this is a 180 puff capacitor. And this is labeled 821, so it's an 820 puff capacitor. Okay, what's left? Looks like a bunch of electrolytics. Let's look at those now. Okay, so this is a 100 microfarad capacitor. It's electrolytic. There's three of them, so it's C7, 13, and 15. Okay, this is a 2.2 microfarad electrolytic, and this is C12. And I have two of these 4.7 microfarad electrolytic capacitors, and these are C11 and C17. And this is the variable capacitor C21. So I've gone through and I checked off that I've located and do have all of the capacitors. And now we can do the inventory of resistors, inductors, and diodes. So I'm just going to cut that open and dump those out in the bottom of the box here. Okay, I have all the resistors out here on the inventory list. Now R1 and 2, these are potentiometers, so they're not in this section. So R3 and 10 are 10 ohms. So I want to look for brown, black, black, gold. Next, I'm looking for 1, R8, 1K, a brown, black, red, gold resistor. Next, we're looking for 2, 10K. So this is a brown, black, orange. And the next one is the 1 meg, 1 million ohms. It's a brown, black, green. And the next, I'm looking for a 100 K ohm, so now it's a brown, black, yellow resistor. So if you're unsure about reading the color code of your resistors, you can check it with your digital multimeter. Just put it in the ohms mode and measure it. Next, I have three inductors to locate. One of the ways you can tell the inductors from a resistor, they kind of look very similar, although the inductors have green bodies and the resistors have brown bodies. Orange, orange, gold, gold, 3.3 microhenry inductor. Next, we're looking for the 4.7 yellow, violet, gold, gold inductor. And the last one's the 15 microhenry inductor. It's a brown, green, black, gold. Okay, the first diode, I'm actually looking for two diodes, a 1 in 5817. Okay, if I can hold this steady enough, look at the top diode. You can see a 1 N 5817. So there's those two diodes. And the other diode is a 1N4004. And there's all the diodes. And this is real obvious as the LED. So I think the rest of the parts are all larger things, connectors and hardware and stuff. So I'm just going to dump all those out in the box here. So I'm just going to go through these quickly now. I'm looking for an audio jack. Next thing is a coaxial power connector. J2 is a BNC printed circuit board mount. So there's the lock washer and nut for the BNC. Okay, next thing I'm looking for is 2 8-pin dip sockets, and those are in this plastic bag with the chips. So here are the two sockets to plug the ICs in. And U1 is the NE602, and U2 is the LM386. U3 is a voltage regulator. This is going to look like a little transistor. Two knobs for the potentiometers. So one slide switch are the two potentiometers. And then they just list all the hardware for the cases and the circuit board material to make up the case. So I do have the printed circuit board for the kit, and I do have all the shims for both the potentiometers and the LEDs. So
looking at the instructions, the first part we're going to mount is one of these 8-pin IC sockets. I will now place the socket on the board with the U channel facing up. And I'm just going to use my X-Acto blade to bend over a couple of the pins to hold the socket in. So an IC socket, what we're going to do is solder one pin first. So I'm just going to put a dab of solder on the iron to help with the heat transfer. Brace it on one side of the pad and the pin is on the other. The solder will go, and nice silver looking, and it fills the hole. I'm checking to see if the socket is down flat on the board, which it is, so now I'm all set to solder the rest of the pins. And now I'm going to solder the rest of the pins. Again, the iron goes on one side of the pad, the solder on the other. Let it wick up till it's nice and silvery. I'm just going to retouch up this first one. And I'm just going to put a little more on this one here. So that's all for now. In the next video, we'll keep soldering parts on the board for the ZZRX-40 40-meter direct conversion receiver kit. Thanks for watching. This is Randy, K7AGE.
Hey, George, I think you might have muted yourself.
I did. I'm glad it wasn't someone else who did it. No.
Usually thanks, it's Randy. Me. You're right. Sorry.
No. It was me. Thanks for that, Randy. Great to see the kit coming along. We look forward to your progress as you move on to the next stage there. Now, let's bring in a man who has not been here in a few weeks, and I know he's beginning to have a backlog of material. Hi, Dale.
Hey, George. Good evening. Good to be back. We got back about the week before last, or late in the week before last, and looking forward to a nice segment tonight with a couple of really good videos. First, in case I forget at the end of the segment, this is the weekend for the Kansas QSO party. So if you like to operate QSO parties, you can get a lot of nice certificates like this particular one from last year. It's on 9 to 9 on Saturday, 9 to 3 on Sunday, the Kansas QSO party. So tonight, as we said, we have two videos. Let's jump right in. First off, with a report from Air Adventure 2016. That's at Oshkosh, Wisconsin. And here's Ham Nation Wiki editor Dan N9LVS.
Welcome to Air Adventure 2016 in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and the W9ZL Special Event Station on the grounds of Whitman Regional Airport. The W9ZL Special Event Station, operated by the Foxes Amateur Radio Club, is located on EAA grounds at Pioneer Airport, which is part of Kid Venture, at what's known as the Lone Rock Service Station. Kid Venture allows kids to explore aviation on several different fronts, including amateur radio. The Foxy's Amateur Radio Club has been doing the Air Venture special event station for many years. What would Kid Venture be without having a couple kids running the radios? Emma, KC9YGJ, was knocking out contacts on 20 meters using John's KC9FMC's Yaesu FT1000 MP Mark V. That was going into a vertical, and Emma was pounding out those contacts. And Jonathan, KD9CZR, not to be outdone, was running an ICOM 746 into a dipole on 40 meters. He was pounding out the contacts as well.
NA2 X-ray, go ahead. You're 5 and 8 from W9CL. Over. Very good, Bob. Thank you for the contact. We're at the EAA in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and it's a big event. You know, people from all over the world are playing.
And that's the AirVenture 2016 W9ZL Special Event Station. Hopefully you can be at AirVenture 2017. For now, this is N9LVS at the W9ZL Special Event Station in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, bidding you 73.
Well, thanks, Dan, and congratulations to you and all members of the Fox Cities Amateur Radio Club for another great special event. Let's move now to the nation's capital and this video report from Mike. He's KC2SYF. Well, how did an amateur radio club from Long Island in New York wind up activating the White House National Park in Washington, D.C., you ask? Well, it all began back in January when the ARRL National Parks on the Air event started. Mike was bitten by the bug. He decided he wanted to be an activator instead of a chaser. So he activated the Fire Island National Seashore, that's on Long Island, and then the Teddy Roosevelt Home in Nassau County there in New York. Then the White House caught his eye. He talked it up with fellow South Bay Amateur Radio Club members, and we're witnessing the results right now.
28 Queen Victoria, 59. These Delta 210.
Georgia, open you are 5 and 9 here in Washington, D.C. at the White House, Delta 210.
Yeah, I think 5 watts at this proximity to the arrow will kind of...
No problem, 73. This is KC2SYF, QRZ. Kilowatt, Quebec, Niner Hotel, 59, Washington, D.C. Anybody supposed to call area number 2? Let me have call area number 2.
That's one thing we didn't set up for is having like a speaker set up.
Queen Victoria, 59, 59, these Delta 210.
More station again.
The Alpha Golf again.
Lose it now. Have a good afternoon. And a KC2... at LOS now,
7-3. Everybody get a leg.
Just get a leg.
Watch the White House.
Okay, affirmative. LHJ4MSR. Water at Juliet 4, Mexico. Sugar Radio.
We're having a lot of fun here. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Charlie 2, Sierra Yankee Foxtrot. Delta Zulu 10. Kilo Delta 4, Romeo Fox from Kilo Charlie 2, Sierra Yankee Foxtrot. Delta Zulu 10.
Kilo Charlie 2 Sierra Yankee Foxtrot, working from the White House. David Zulu 10, White House, working any locals on 2 meter simplex.
November 9 X-ray Hotel November, you are 59 at the White House. Thank you for calling. Where are you from?
QRZ.
CQ from the White House, Kilo Charlie 2, Sierra Yankee Foxtrot.
CQ, this is Kilo Charlie 2, Sugar Yankee Fox, KC2SYF, on CQ from the White House, Washington, D.C. National Parks on the Air. Delta Zulu 10, QRZ.
See those antennas.
The rear flank down draft will be cold air coming out of the thunderstorm light.
Washington, D.C., at the White House. National Parks on the Air. Delta Zulu 10.
Yeah, it's buried under bus 33 where I get.
All right, they just shut Reagan again for the next 30 minutes. Until the weather passes through, we got about 30 minutes.
When this project started, Mike couldn't help but believe that the White House would be the Navassa of the National Parks on the Air event. Other South Bay Club members agreed with him, so did other amateur radio operators around the nation. They made more than 1,200 contacts during that weekend. Mike paid the fee. He filed for the permit in May, and just 4 days before the scheduled event in August, the National Park Service issued the club a permit for President's Park. Fortunately, the group had already booked their hotel rooms. They'd purchased everything they would need to run the event, anticipating that they would get that approval. They used Mike's call sign during the event. It's KC2SYF. And on August 5th and 6th, they operated CW, single sideband, and satellite communications from the park. They used 7600s, ICOM 7600s with Transworld antennas. And Mike invites you to watch the full video at www.gsbarc.org. Well, that's it for the video segment, pretty much. We'll have a number of shack photos and a few field day photos when we return on September 7th. And we'll be starting a special six-segment DIY video series from Bob Rice, VE3HKY, on that date. You won't want to miss Bob's excellent video tutorial. And do send your shack photos and videos to hamnationvideos@twit.tv. Before you edit your videos, though, please take the time to check out the submission guidelines at hamnationvideos.info. And don't forget this Saturday, the Kansas CUSO party. It's going to be 9 to 9 Saturday, 9 to 3 Sunday. We'll be putting the U in the Sunflower Award this year with the one-by-one call W0U. Hope to talk to you this weekend. Let's go now to our Southwest Missouri studio. We will be going there, and where Bob's got a very special interview lined up. But right now, let's pick up the latest from Don. Take it away, Don.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that, Dale. I remember covering the White House special event, the National Parks on the Air, on Amateur Radio Newsline. It was fascinating. It was awesome to see that video. Very good stuff. Thanks for bringing that to us. And speaking of news, why don't we go ahead and get the latest of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline report number 2025, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, August 24th, 2016, coming to you from the floor of the Huntsville Ham Fest. The National Weather Service is now calling it the 1,000-year rain. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards says 30,000 people and 1,000 pets have already been rescued. 40,000 people have registered with FEMA for disaster assistance, and at least 12 people have died in the flood so far.
Louisiana Aries Section Emergency Coordinator Adam Tamplin, KD5LEH, tells Amateur Radio Newsline how many residents displaced by the floodwaters are in the shelters.
The latest number I heard was between 12 and 13,000 in shelters, that may be off by 1 or 2,000. Flooding is still affecting some newer areas as conditions change, with some of the backwater flooding coming down in the river basin.
Tamplin outlines the initial response by ham operators in the Bayou State and surrounding region.
Well, we activated the Louisiana section late Sunday evening. Right now, we actively have around 15 or so hams at various shelters, and they're handling tactical communications between the shelters and the Red Cross headquarters in Baton Rouge. Texas and Mississippi, they called to offer their support to us. We also had Alabama that called to offer their support to us, and we are coordinating with those sections to see if we can get some help from them or not.
And what is the current state of communications in the affected areas?
Most normal modes of communication are still up. Our statewide interoperability network is still running. Most telephone services are still running. We are having some issues with some of the cell phone carriers right now, although those issues are improving.
Tamplin says in addition to localized repeater and simplex frequencies in Louisiana, two HF frequencies may be utilized for urgent amateur radio traffic related to this disaster.
Right now we designated 7255 and 3873 as emergency frequencies. Of course, we don't necessarily declare emergencies like we used to, but if you do hear some traffic that's areas related on those frequencies. Also, we do have a statewide amateur radio network that's on the Louisiana Link system. It's a voice over IP system that networks right now. I believe we have about 10 repeaters on that system that we're able to use to coordinate between different regional offices for the Red Cross.
Hams outside of Louisiana are being asked to not self-deploy. Those who would like to make their availability known should coordinate through the Louisiana Aries headquarters by contacting Steve Irvin, WA5FKF, at area code 225-933-4993. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, reporting from Topeka, Kansas.
We'll be following this story for further developments. Having trouble hearing that other station? Sometimes it's the signal, but sometimes it's also the noise.
The FCC's Technological Advisory Council plans a comprehensive study of the noise floor, and until earlier this month had been receiving input on how to conduct the study and what to look for along the way. Hams and other interested parties were invited to comment on where the problem exists, what devices make it worse, what bands are most affected, and how natural propagation effects can be accounted for when undertaking such a study. The agency was also looking for suggestions on the study's methodology and ways to take meaningful measurements. When the study was announced earlier this year, the ARRL responded to the news by calling it encouraging, adding that the league hopes the findings will provide guidelines for decisions on band allocations, enforcement, and other spectrum management matters. The amateur radio community has been anticipating such a study since the FCC first requested one in 1999. The comment period closed August 11th, and the amateur community now awaits the agency's next move. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Damron, NATMW.
As always, there is much more to these stories and others, and you can hear them all on this week's Amateur Radio Newsline report. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, Jim Damron, NATMW, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wellbanks, AE5DW at the Huntsville Hamfest, 7-3. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. And now, here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove.
We had a stealthy solar storm along with some fast wind that gave us a roar all over the world. And over the next 2 weeks, we have two more chances for some solar storms. Those stories and more in the news this week. Although the sun has been quieting down in terms of flares, we're still getting a lot of activity. We keep getting little wispy mini solar storms that are launched, and when they're launched next to coronal holes like this one here, we get fast wind on top of that. And that's what has happened just recently. We've managed to get a nice solar storm. It was actually bigger than anticipated. And these types of things will continue. We have some new active regions that are coming around with some new coronal holes that are going to be entering the Earth's strike zone in probably about a week. And then we've got even more stuff on the backside. So you amateur aurora photographers, get ready, because it looks like we have more chances for aurora. Switching to our M-flare threat meter, you can see we really are still pretty flatlined when it comes to flares. We are popping a few C-class flares here and there, but there's just not a lot of activity and no active regions that are doing anything other than sleeping. So you amateur radio operators, you should be pretty happy here, because we aren't going to have any radio blackouts, but we do need enough light to be able to keep that solar flux up so that you guys can enjoy your radio propagation. Switching to your solar storm conditions, you can see we've been quiet for quite some time. We did have a little pocket of fast wind that bumped us up in activity back on the 21st, but then it quieted down, and then bam, we get hit by this stealthy solar storm that's followed up by some fast wind that's managed to give us some aurora, beautiful aurora all over the world. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we have now entered that fast wind stream that has followed that stealthy solar storm that gave us aurora back on the 23rd. So we're still expecting active conditions over the next 24 hours or so. NOAA is giving us about a 20% chance of a major storm at high latitudes. At mid latitudes, it's only about a 20% chance of a minor storm. And then things will begin to taper down after that. And then things will should be quiet until about a week's time, when we expect to have that second coronal hole that rotates into the Earth's strike zone and gives us some more fast wind. So you amateur radio operators, you might expect to see some issues on the ham bands a little bit more than you would want to. But you aurora photographers, it gives you another chance for some beautiful pictures. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, you can see pretty much everything is in the green. We really don't have any activity on the Earth-facing disk right now. Region 2579 is the biggest player, which may pop off a few C-class flares, but there's not much of a chance of that. And outside of that, we basically have to worry about the solar flux that is kind of in the marginal level. So you amateur radio operators are going to have a bit of an issue here and there getting propagation, especially near the gray line, that type of thing. So expect this to continue into the near future. We really don't see the sun doing anything but continuing to quiet down. So the space weather this week has been pretty exciting. We've had a stealthy solar storm that has given us some gorgeous aurora all over the world, and we're not quite done yet. We're now in the fast wind that's kind of giving us a chance for pulsating aurora and maybe even a proton arc here and there. So your aurora photographers should be pretty happy. Your amateur radio operators, things should be getting a little bit better now. I know it's been kind of tough the last day or so, but things will be quiet for probably about a week, and then we'll get another chance for some solar storms, and then things will quiet down, and then a week after that, yet another chance because of these fast wind that comes from these coronal holes. So you amateur radio ops, you get kind of, if you know when to get on the bands, then you're good, but just have to deal with some of these solar storms. Your aurora photographers, you better keep your shutter finger loose, because it might be a really cool couple of weeks. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Oh, so nice to have Dr. T back. And of course, just got back from Huntsville, where we had the Young Ham of the Year Award. And we've got a few pictures for you now from the ceremony. We'll run through those really, really quickly because we're running a little bit late. Brian, if you'll bring those up, we'll talk about those. There is Skyler and, of course, Emmett and Gordon. And that's our friend from Yaesu back in the back. We'll see more of him. And that little, go back, because that little gray box, I want to show you something about that little gray box. That is the 900 megahertz internet-linked repeater that Skyler built. Those are a couple of, I believe, Motorola handhelds in there. And he went inside and he wired them all together, and he's got a Raspberry Pi in there with a little Wi-Fi antenna sticking out. And it is a working, on the air, internet connected, going through, I believe, the hotspot on his phone, 900 megahertz repeater. And I talked to somebody across the country on it later that night. Just absolutely amazing. And that is just... And he made it Wednesday. Meanwhile, well, you know what I was doing. I was off in the corner eating my crayons. So let's go ahead and continue running through those. Of course, Rich Moseson from CQ Magazine, always good to have him there. Gordon looking over. There we go. There is Dennis Machenbacher from Yaesu with the 817, part of the Young Ham of the Year Award gifts. And as we continue on through there, I don't know who that guy is. He snuck in. Best dressed guy in the planet there. And, of course, our friend Emmett from Radio Waves. And, Bob, I've got something to show you, a new product from Radio Waves here whenever we get done with this. But it was just a great time. There's the group shot. And, of course, with Chris, the Maxim winner as well. And it was just an awesome, awesome time. Thanks so much to the Huntsville Ham Fest. And Bob, I know you're a big fan of resonant antennas, resonant wire antennas. This looks like just your garden variety tape measure, but it is a Radio Waves antenna tape. And if you pull this open, you'll find everything that you normally see on a tape measure. But let me see if I can show you this, because right here at about the 19-inch mark, you will see, I don't know if you can see this or not, at the 19-inch mark, you probably can't see. Let's see. Where is it? I'll just read it for you here. It says at the 19-inch mark, 148 megahertz, quarter wave. So that's where you, if you're doing wire antennas or you're doing elements, that's where you go. We go out to the 38. There's your halfway for 148. We'll just keep going out here a little ways because we want to get on some of the lower bands. If we go out to 84 inches, we're looking at a 15-meter loop, and right at the same area is a full wave for 2 meter. And you go on out, and you'll get to 10 meters and 40 meters and whatnot. So if you want to measure some resonant antennas, this would sure make it easier. The Radio Waves antenna tape. How do you like that, Mr. Heil?
Yeah, that's great. That's great. So but what tough. Are you going to do for 160? And we're going to talk about that here now. I have one of my my great friends that I talked to on 75 meters for years, and I want to bring Doug into here. Doug, you and Maida there tonight, WG4U. How are you?
I'm Bob. Maida's in the other room, and hello to everyone.
Well, you always are my, I just adore your work. You do some of the most incredible building. And you sent me some recent pictures, and we're going to run through some of these. And this is a tuner, but it's not just a tuner. It's a balanced tuner. Tell us a little bit about what's on that screen, Doug.
Okay. Well, starting from the far left, of course, is the coaxial input from your rig. And then I've got the number 31 beads around the, that's actually, it's RG213 coax. And then I've got 15 beads, and that's RF choking to keep any signal from coming back into the shack or on this side of the tuner. Then there is two large roller inductors, which covers 160, 80, and 40 relatively well. They're almost too big to go to 20 because they have too much inter-electrode capacitance to them. And then you have a capacitor across the two, and this is a balanced tuner. A lot of people run an L tuner, an L network, and this is basically a double of that for balanced line. And of course, balanced line doesn't radiate because it is balanced. And across those coils, I have a 65 to 870 PF. It's an SF6, which is the gas that's in it for insulation. Capacitor, vacuum capacitor works just as well, or an air variable. And when I started out, I only had that on the output side. And then I found out that if you ran into impedance at some frequency, you had to lower than 50 ohm, then I would have to switch it to the input side. So that's what the switch is there, Bob. And that's,
yeah.
And it's very low loss tuner. It's just basically no loss at all.
Well, it's very unique. And let's take a look at the next picture, and this will give you some idea of how this thing is built. It really is incredible. It's actually two tuners. Most people would only have one, as you would say. Tell us a little bit about what's right in the middle, Doug, that cylinder.
That cylinder is a, it's not a vacuum variable, it's a gas air variable. And but it's just like a an air variable capacitor, but it has this SF6 gas around it, which is one of the world's best insulators. We used them. I worked at a power plant, and we used SF6 when we was breaking 168,000 volt lines and stuff like that with maybe no more than a half inch gap. And so that capacitor contains that. It's pretty amazing insulator. Sulfuric hexafluoride is what the gas is in it, Bob.
Yeah, I see a belt that runs both of those at the same time. And the really cool part of it is what you have done, your construction is always really meticulous. But the back of it's ordinary. But then you really turned a corner on us. It's what you did with it. Tell us a little bit about what we're seeing here. This is cool.
Okay, well, I live in a mobile home. And that was a part of the closet here in the bedroom. And in that portion of the closet originally was the hot water tank. And I took that and moved it because I didn't want it inside. And that left me a blank space up there. And so I mounted the tuner. I fixed that and mounted the tuner there in the wall. And that way I could bring the balanced line in from right behind it from outside. And I made an insulated panel and did some, there you go, with some ceramic feed-throughs. And that's how the balanced line gets into the to the back of the closet and then up to the tuner. And that way I just punch the radio in tune and walk over and watch the meter and dial the wheels till I got her matched out.
That's great. Then we come to another great part. You made your own feed line. I see made it there. You you stretched this out. How long is that? You used sawhorses to get started. How long is the feed line?
I had the kit I bought was for 250 feet of feed line it was supposed to make. And I closed the spacing on them just a little bit from their recommendations so that the line would stay straight. And I built, about 170 feet or so of feed line there. That was enough to go from where I wanted to be to the tower and up the tower to the antenna over.
Yeah, and one of the other really cool things in this next picture, this is the only way to do this. Tell us about ladder snap. What a really great thing that is.
Oh, they certainly are. They're just basically spacers for your open wire. And number 14 THHC wire, solid or stranded. I use stranded because of the flexibility of it. But anyway, that just snaps right into those, and they hold perfect spacing and build you a 600 ohm line. And the convenience of them is just wonderful. They're well worth what they cost. I'll say that for it, Bob.
Yeah, and then the thing that I was noticing, you'll see it here in the next one, the way that you snapped it on and spaced it, that's kind of neat. You space it away, and you had your special little pliers that you notched out so that that made it easier there. That's showing the pliers. You didn't, that way it fits into the plastic snap, right?
Right. One side you can see I ground away part of the pliers and made a little bar that just set right on the wire, and the outside one on the other side, the end of the ladder snap, and you put that on the wire and it just pops it right into the groove. Some people spray a little lubricant on there. I did not. I didn't have any trouble snapping them in. And once that wire snapped into that to that ladder snap, it doesn't move. It's very, very solid and rigid. And the PVC pipe there that made us hold it is what I use for spacing. I think I set it at 16 inches long. They recommend 18, but I shortened it up a little bit because I wasn't building full 250 feet and I knew I had enough snaps to do the job.
Well, it did. What's really cool about it is it you're such a home brewer and a builder and just one of the best that I've seen some of your work with your amplifiers and stuff. But here it takes it right to the end, you made your own feed line, and so can everybody else. This was a question I had, but you solved that, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I took some military fiberglass poles and elevated it approximately 10 feet above the ground, and so that it wouldn't bother me if I wanted to drive the truck through there, or the van, or the four-wheeler, or mowing, or anything. And I come off the back deck and then turned and went up the tower right there, like you're seeing. And what I do there is I anchor that feed line at the bottom, and I ran it up with the rope when I pull it up the pulley until it's taut. And once you get it that way, you don't have to worry about the wind blowing it around. You don't have to worry about standoffs to hold it rigid. I've never had a problem in any kind of weather. It does a great job, and it always tunes right out. The only thing I ever see that changes it is the rain. When I get a lot of moisture, I have to tune it a little bit, Bob.
Well, it's just a great story. I wanted to share it with our audience because these are some of the questions we get once in a while about tuners, and you just really have to be careful. Some of these tuners are not very good, but boy, the balanced tuner is the way to go, and it's a really unique way of doing the feed line. I really appreciate that, Doug. What great work.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me. You know, make you proud when you build something.
Well, we'll see you on the 3740 after a while. And anybody got questions, they can find you there late night. You and Maida and Jim and all the guys. I appreciate your time and sending all those pictures. And we'll get into some of your amplifiers one of these days because, boy, you sure have done work on that. So thanks a lot. And I'll see you later.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. We'll see ya.
All right. Super incredible builder this guy is. We'll share some of his other projects. So I think from here we are running so late. Amanda, how are you? Are you still awake?
I am still awake. I'm here. And hello to everyone on the show. Doug, thanks for joining us tonight. Don had to take off already. He had to go have dinner with the honey there. So I just wanted to ask Doug a couple more questions if he's still around.
I'm here. Go ahead.
Okay, Doug. Well, thanks so much for your antenna there. And we always want to know, what else are you running there? What other antennas? What else do you do on HF?
Mostly 160 in the winter and 75 in the summer if the noise gets too great. And I don't do a lot of other HF work anymore. Those two bands, I love to rag chew, and I've got a really good group. And a lot of times we get off on some technical discussions, and I enjoy that. And then it may just be anything for talking. But that's basically what we do. I run a 590 Kenwood and, of course, a homebrew amp. Got a couple of transistors in it. Does a great job. All that stuffed into that antenna, that's actually a 160-meter cut, but I talk on 75 by tuning it. That's the great part of the balanced line. You can do anything you want to.
There you go. And obviously, Maida also is a ham. Is that correct?
That's correct. Her call's okay. NM8N, November, Mike, oh. 8 November.
Well, it's too bad she couldn't jump in and say hello. But one other question we had from the chat room tonight, how tall is that tower that you had behind your house there?
75 feet.
Okay, 75 feet. Well, Doug, thanks for joining us tonight. That is a nice tower, by the way. Good job there. I won't keep us any longer. I'm just going to mention the nets tonight. We have 7180 going on 40 meters, and we have 14268 on 20 meters. D-Star, 14 Charlie, and do drop in for Echo Link. One other thing, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Ham Nation on Twit. Look for us there. So over to you, Bob. Great show.
Okay, yeah, it's been fun, and we'll have to go on the air and see if we can find Tyler somewhere with his new gear. He's got a new Heil HM12, and he's got some new Yaesu gear, and what a guy. And we'll have to catch up on him and see how all of his new equipment is working. Listen, thanks a lot, everybody. It's been a long show, but lots of information here as usual. And you do not want to miss next week, because we have an incredible announcement that's going to take place in the next couple of weeks with some program changes and additions. So join us next week. We're going to keep you posted. I'll keep you hanging for a week at least. So 7-3, we will see you on the Nets. And I will be in Joplin Saturday at the Joplin Ham Fest. So if you're there, look me up. I'll be there with Big Larry. And why I mean Big Larry, he's 6'7", I think. And a great VHFer in Zero MST, been a friend for years. And I'll be with he and his wife, Sue. So look us up. Take care, everybody, and we'll talk to you right back here on Ham Nation next week. Bye-bye for now.